Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Jeremiah chapter 42, which I will entitle Warning Against Going to Egypt. In our last chapter, we saw Jeremiah settling down in Mizpah, where Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, had been appointed to be governor of Judah by the Babylonian king Nebuchadnezzar. This is after the destruction of Jerusalem in 586, and so the little rump kingdom, it wasn't a kingdom anymore, it was actually a province, a governorship, if you will, and Gedaliah had been appointed governor over the rump of Judah, and since Jerusalem was burnt down, they had taken up residence in Mizpah, which was a town about 10 miles north of Jerusalem. Now, one of the commanders of the remainder of the army of Judah was named Ishmael, son of Nethaniah. And Ammon, the kingdom to the east of the Jordan River and to the east of the northern part of the Dead Sea, Ammon had a king named Baalis, B-A-A-L-I-S, and Baalis had bribed Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, to take over Gedaliah's little rump province of Judah. So Ishmael assassinated Gedaliah, the duly appointed governor. Ishmael, after killing a number of folks in Mizpah, took off. He was trying to avoid another one of the commanders of Gedaliah, a man named Johanan, the son of Kareah. Well, they met at Gibeon. All of Ishmael, son of Nethaniah's hostages, which is basically the old harem of King Zedekiah, the last king of Judah, all the hostages says, "No, we don't want you, Ishmael. We want Johanan." So at that point, Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, heads out to Ammon. Johanan, son of Kareah, takes over. He's now in charge. He doesn't chase Ishmael back to Ammon. He instead starts fleeing southward and ends up going southeast till he gets near Bethlehem at a place called Geruth Kimham. And this is where we take up the story. So we start now in Jeremiah 42, verses 1 through 6. Then all the army officers, including Johanan, son of Kareah, and Jezaniah, son of Hoshea, and all the people from the least to the greatest, approached Jeremiah the prophet and said to him, "Please hear our petition and pray to the Lord your God for this entire remnant. For as you now see, though we were once many, now only a few are left. Pray that the Lord your God will tell us where we should go and what we should do." "I have heard you," replied Jeremiah the prophet. "I will certainly pray to the Lord your God as you have requested. I will tell you everything the Lord says and will keep nothing back from you." Then they said to Jeremiah, "May the Lord be a true and faithful witness against us if we do not act in accordance with everything the Lord your God sends you to tell us. Whether it is favorable or unfavorable, we will obey the Lord our God to whom we are sending you, so that it will go well with us, for we will obey the Lord our God." We see in verse 1 that it was not just Johanan, son of Kareah, that approached Jeremiah, but also his army officers. Those army officers are listed in the last chapter, or two chapters ago, actually, Jeremiah 40, verse 8. The commanders included Ishmael, son of Nethaniah. Well, that's the rebel that just left for Ammon. Johanan, he's the one that's in charge now, son of Kareah. Jonathan, the son of Kareah, who is the brother of Johanan. We hear no more of him. Seraiah, son of Tanhumeth. Again, just a name. The sons of Iphai, the Netophathite. Last we hear of those sons. Jezaniah, son of Machathite, and he's mentioned again here. I suspect because he's now Johanan's chief officer. At any rate, the large and the great approached Jeremiah. Now, Jeremiah has disappeared from the narrative. All that background I gave you about the civil commotions going on in the rump of Judah. The last we heard of Jeremiah, he had been released from Ramoth by Nebuzaradan, and Nebuzaradan said, "Why don't you go to Mizpah and hang out with Johanan, son of Kareah?" Actually, not Johanan at the time. It was Gedaliah, who was still alive then, and Jeremiah did. He went to Mizpah, and that's the last we heard of him. And then all this civil commotion between Johanan and Ishmael happened, and we don't hear of Jeremiah. And all of a sudden, now he shows up here at Geruth Kimham. So how did he get there? Well, here's a couple of options. The first option, and I think is the most likely option, Jeremiah was at Mizpah when Gedaliah was assassinated by Ishmael. when Ishmael killed, quote unquote, all the Jews, as the scripture says, as Jeremiah says, all the Jews, that didn't mean literally all of them, just a lot of them. And Jeremiah miraculously escaped being slaughtered. And so he was carried along with the eunuchs, the women, and the children, the court officials, on down to Gibeon, where the harem and other officials abandoned Ishmael. There were also some captured soldiers in that little coterie of captives. Well, Jeremiah was probably one of them. Now, I think that maybe when Gedaliah was murdered by Ishmael, Ishmael was afraid to murder Jeremiah because Jeremiah, after all, was a prophet. You just don't go around murdering prophets. And so that's why he ended up at Giroth-Kinham, fleeing there with all the other escapees who were now under the tutelage of Johanan, son of Kareah. Now, another possibility is that instead of going to Gibeon after Ishmael had captured the harem, that he had earlier left before the assassination of Gedaliah by Ishmael. He had decided to go back to his hometown of Anatoth, which is not too far away if you look at the map. And while he was gone, that's when Ishmael assassinated Gedaliah. And so Jeremiah, when he hears about what's happened, he hears that the rump is down there at Giroth-Kimham, and so he goes down to Giroth-Kimham to be with them. That's reasonable, actually, but I think he was at Mizpah during the assassination attempt, and he just wasn't killed because he was a prophet. Now, in verse 2, all the officers says, "Please hear our petition." Notice the please. Jeremiah was treated with the greatest respect, of course, but they weren't going to listen to him. Nobody's been listening to Jeremiah now for years, ever since 627 or so B.C. during the reign of Josiah when he started prophesying. It's now 586, and nobody's listened to a word he said. "Please hear our petition and pray to the Lord your God," they say. Your God, Jeremiah's God, that would be Yahweh, but theoretically, at least, you would think that Yahweh would be the army officer's God, too. Why didn't they say, "Pray to the Lord our God"? They didn't. Now, they switch their pronoun when they get down to verse 6, and they call him the Lord our God. But right now, they're calling him the Lord your God. "For as you now see, we were once many, not only a few." I guess they were only a few. Their small numbers were a result of sword, famine, pestilence, captivity, and finally Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah. Maybe that's why they were saying, "Jeremiah, you are God," because they had lost faith in their God. And I don't want to be too critical here, because when you go through stuff like that, it's understandable when people lose faith in God. Jeremiah didn't, though. Now in verse 3, the rump, the army officers, said, "Ask God to tell us where we should go or what we should do." Now notice, they didn't say where we should go or what we should do or if we should stay. Now they could have gone back to Mizpah and continued serving the Babylonians. We discussed this option in the last chapter. But they were perhaps afraid, as many commentators think, that if they went back to Mizpah, the Babylonians would blame them for Ishmael's rebellion. Even though they had fought Ishmael, even though Johanan, son of Kareah, had fought Ishmael, which you would think would make the Babylonians happy, not angry. But, as other commentators have pointed out, it could be that the Babylonians would not understand that. They say, "Yeah, you're pretending that you fought him. Actually, you were just fighting for power because both of you were trying to rebel against the Babylonian rule, and you Jews down here have been a mighty obnoxious people for a long time. We don't believe you, so we're going to take you out." So I think it was actually reasonable that they thought that staying was not a live option. So what they were asking here was for sanction from Jeremiah, not direction from Jeremiah. They weren't planning to stay. They just wanted to know, where can we go? What we should do might include staying, but they weren't going to stay. They wanted to know where they could go. In verse 4, Jeremiah says, "I hear you. I will certainly pray." Jeremiah is probably here feeling a lot of compassion for this pitiful remnant of people. It is pretty pathetic. Jeremiah says, "I will certainly pray to the Lord your God as you have requested." Jeremiah realizes that it's still true that Yahweh is the people of Judah's God, even though they won't call him such. And then Jeremiah promises to tell them everything God says, won't keep anything back. And then in verse 5, the officers say, "May the Lord be a true and faithful witness against us." Now that's an oath. That's in the form of an oath. Famous last words. They didn't listen to a word Jeremiah said. They said, "We'll do everything. We'll act in accordance with everything the Lord your God sends us." Notice the "your God." They're still calling God your God. But then in verse 6, "Whether it is favorable or unfavorable, we will obey the Lord our God." Well, I don't know if these change in pronouns mean anything. This is just my speculation. It sure sounds suspicious how they change the pronouns like that, but now he's our God, and we will obey him. They say it twice. We will obey the Lord our God, and then at the end of the verse, for we will obey the Lord our God. Oh, yeah. Famous last words. The people are saying here, by oath, under oath, that if they don't obey, God's judgment would come upon them, which it did. It could be that they never even intended to obey any word of the Lord that said stay, in which case they were pretty hypocritical, and that's sort of the conclusion I just came to. Now, one last mention of these pronouns that are used here in verse 6. Yahweh is now the Lord our God, the God of the commanders. Perhaps because they were making such a big deal about obeying him that they decided to call Yahweh their own. We go now to Jeremiah 42, verses 7 through 12. 10 days later, the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah. So he called together Johanan, son of Kareah, and all the army officers who were with him, and all the people from the least to the greatest. He said to them, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, to whom you sent me to present your petition, says. If you stay in this land, I will build you up and not tear you down. I will plant you and not uproot you. For I am grieved over the disaster I have inflicted on you. Do not be afraid of the king of Babylon, whom you now fear. Do not be afraid of him, declares the Lord, for I am with you and will save you and deliver you from his hands. I will show you compassion so that he will have compassion on you and restore you to your land." In other words, Jeremiah is saying, stay here, submit to the Babylonians, and you can live a happy life. Happy, given the circumstances. Notice in verse 7 that the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah 10 days later. This was the word that was mentioned way back 2 chapters ago in Jeremiah 40. Jeremiah 40, verse 1. This is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord after Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, released him at Ramah. And then there's no word. This is a bunch of history for 2 chapters until we get here. Now, why did Jeremiah wait 10 days to deliver the word of the Lord to the officers? Well, actually, he didn't wait. It says 10 days later, the word of the Lord came. So why did God wait 10 days to give the word to Jeremiah? Here's some options. Perhaps doing that would make the word have greater weight when it came, as they all waited expectantly. Waiting 10 days would make it appear more likely that the word was not of Jeremiah himself, but of God, because if it was Jeremiah, he would have just said it right then. No, you need to stay. The third option is God withheld the word because he wanted to mortify the rump. The army officers were impatient of an answer. God knew they were hypocrites. He knew they weren't going to obey Jeremiah no matter what Jeremiah said. He foresaw their disobedience, so he wanted to keep them in suspense a while. Now, I don't know. That makes the Lord seem somewhat petty. I don't know. It might have been because God wanted to test the people, wanted to see if they really were going to obey. But God has his reasons for those 10 days. I'm not exactly sure what they were. Now, the word was simple. Stay and prosper. Go and suffer disaster. Now, in the midst of giving the word, Jeremiah, quoting Yahweh, says that Yahweh was grieved over the disaster that Yahweh had inflicted on the people. Now, that's sort of interesting that God would be grieved for what he did. Well, speaking anthropomorphically, of course, God is grieving because he had to inflict punishment on his children, just like a parent doesn't feel great when he has to spank his child, but he does that because he loves his child and knows he has to do it. It's because of free will, because people will use their free will to sin mightily. But that doesn't mean God was happy about it. Now, let's take a little theological excursus here, a little rabbit trail. God is said to be impassible, which means he's without emotion. Well, here he says he's grieved. The reason that God is, according to Orthodox theology, impassible is because he's perfect. Now, if you're going to have an emotion, let's say you want to be happy. If you're a human being, point A, you're sad. Time goes by, and at point B, you're happy. So there's been a change in you from sadness to happiness, and it takes time. Well, God is not in time. And if at any one time God was in an inferior state, a state of being sad, that means he's not perfect. And when he advances from being sad to happy, he becomes perfect. And God can't become perfect because he already is perfect. Now, that's a difficult doctrine because we think, well, if God can't have any emotions, well, what about us? How can he feel for us? Well, that's why he sent Jesus, and Jesus was human, and Jesus surely experienced every kind of grief that we could even think about, especially being nailed up on that cross. Verse 11, Jeremiah says, "Do not be afraid of the king of Babylon." So go back to Mizpah, in other words. Now, we see in the last chapter, Jeremiah 41, verse 18, that the rump, under your awning, were afraid of the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, for they feared them because Ishmael son of Nethaniah had struck down Gedaliah son of Ahikam, whom the king of Babylon had appointed in the land. And we discussed to great length whether that was a reasonable fear or not. I've mentioned it again in this chapter. Let's run by that again. Arguably, this was a groundless fear. If it were true that the Babylonians would have praised Jehonan's defeat of Ishmael, because Ishmael was the rebel and Jehonan was sticking up for the murdered governor of Babylon, Gedaliah, if that were true, that the Babylonians understood that and would have praised Jehonan for beating the rebel, well, then Babylon would be happy because Jehonan did exactly what Babylon would have done, which is to kill the rebel. However, the Babylonians might not have praised Jehonan's defeat of Ishmael because they would not have understood the internal politics of the rump regime in Judah. They might have thought that Jehonan was at first involved in the revolt and then decided, well, I'm going to kill Ishmael, my fellow rebel, because I want the spoils of the revolution. I don't want Ishmael to have it. And so the Babylonians might think that way, and Jehonan was probably rightly concerned that the Babylonians would not understand his story when he got back. Well, whether Jehonan's officers and Jehonan's fears were groundless or not, Jeremiah's prophecy should have killed that fear that they had. But they didn't listen to Jeremiah. They didn't serve Yahweh or love Yahweh. We go now to Jeremiah 42, verses 13 through 18. However, if you say, we will not stay in this land, Jeremiah continues, and so disobey the Lord your God, and if you say, no, we will go and live in Egypt, where we will not see war or hear the trumpet or be hungry for bread, then hear the word of the Lord, O remnant of Judah. He calls them the remnant. I like to call them the rump, which means the same thing, but it's just a little more pejorative. O remnant of Judah, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. If you are determined to go to Egypt and you do go to settle there, then the sword you fear will overtake you there, and the famine you dread will follow you into Egypt, and there you will die. This is what happened eventually, as we see, as we go through Jeremiah. Indeed, all who were determined to go to Egypt to settle there will die by the sword, famine, and plague. Not one of them will survive or escape the disaster I will bring on them. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. As my anger and wrath have been poured out on those who lived in Jerusalem, so will my wrath be poured out on you when you go to Egypt. You will be an object of cursing and horror, of condemnation and reproach. You will never see this place again. Now, with all that imprecation by Yahweh upon the remnant, should they go to Egypt, I ask myself the question, why was Yahweh so intent on keeping them from going to Egypt? What's the big deal? Well, this is my speculation. I didn't read this in a commentary, so you can take this with the usual grain of salt. I suspect that Yahweh wanted the remnant to stay in Judah, to keep things going in Judah, in anticipation of the return from Babylon in 538 BC, when the captivity was over. So the returning exiles would be in better shape and would have a foundation to build on when they got back to Jerusalem. Just my speculation. I think it's a reasonable one. At any rate, it was very clear God did not want them to go to Egypt. He says, not one of you will escape. Not one of you will survive. All of you are going to die. Now, there's not many of them left, but you're talking about the royal household of Zedekiah, his women, his children, his wives, his concubines, his court officials, some of his soldiers, all going to be snuffed out. The absolute end of the house of David until Jesus the Messiah sits on his spiritual throne when he comes about half a millennium later. So we go now to Jeremiah 42, verses 19 through 22, and we will finish this chapter. Jeremiah continues, O remnant of Judah, the Lord has told you, do not go to Egypt. Be sure of this, I warn you today, that you made a fatal mistake when you sent me to the Lord your God and said, pray to the Lord our God for us. Tell us everything he says, and we will do it. I have told you today, but you still have not obeyed the Lord your God and all he sent me to tell you. So now, be sure of this. You will die by the sword, famine, and plague in the place where you want to go to settle. Well, the remnant sure couldn't complain that they weren't told. Jeremiah made it perfectly clear. In verse 20, Jeremiah says, you made a fatal mistake when you sent for me. The NIV margin has you erred in your heart. The KJV says you dissembled, which means you played the hypocrite. If that's the proper translation, that would indeed show that they were hypocrites. And that's the conclusion to which we were tending in our interpretation of this. But I don't trust the KJV translation. on something like this. The ESV had, Jeremiah tells the remnant, "You have dealt deceitfully against your own souls." I like fatal mistake, like fatal error. Sounds like the blue screen of death. I think the computer warning that you got said fatal error, if I remember correctly. I haven't had one of those blue screens of death in a long time. I pray that I never have another one. Well, what mistake did they make? Was the mistake in asking for a word from Jeremiah? No, Jeremiah wouldn't tell them that they made a mistake in coming to him. The mistake was in not listening to Jeremiah. Perhaps the fatal mistake was not even planning to listen to Jeremiah, but they came to him anyway. I don't think they planned to not listen to Jeremiah. They wouldn't have gone through the motions of asking a prophet to give them a prophecy if they weren't intending on obeying it. They were just asking Jeremiah, "Where can we go? We'll do anything you say and anything that God says, but we're not going back to Mizpah to subject ourselves to the Babylonians." And you know, sometimes God gives us a word that's hard to do, but if you listen to him, you're blessed. But if you go where your fears tell you to go, all of you end up dying. You end up dying along with everybody else that's with you doing that. Listen to God and do what he says. That's a great application. If I were giving a little homily on chapter 42, that's how I would end it up. If God tells you to do something and you think, "Wait a minute, that doesn't seem a good thing to do. My nerves and my fears are warning me against doing that," but you are absolutely convinced that God has told you, maybe through a prophetic word, maybe through the counsel of friends, for whatever, go ahead and do it, and he'll bless you, because I guarantee you the decisions you have to make in this life are so difficult. So you need a word from God as you make the decision. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you've enjoyed that exhortation. As we finish chapter 42 of Jeremiah, we are now prepared to go to chapter 43, which I will entitle Jeremiah Taken to Egypt. Now, that must have been bad. He says, "Don't go to Egypt. You go down there and every one of you are going to die." And they take him to Egypt with him. Instead of leaving him there, they take him with them in direct disobedience of God's word. They go to Egypt. But we'll see what happens in our next chapter. I hope you stay tuned for that exposition, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.